Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. And hello, this is Andrew Horowitz. This is the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 134 for the middle of November 2009. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for coming and listening in on one of the best independent, if I do say so myself, the independent investment, financial, stock, bond, ETF show out there. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for being around. And I do appreciate your ears. I do appreciate you coming. I do appreciate all the emails that I get, and I really appreciate the reviews that you give me on iTunes. Boy, oh boy, you guys are just awesome. And truly, the emails that come in on a weekly basis, I got to tell you something, are just tremendous. You know, every once in a while, somebody doesn't like this. Maybe there's a little glitch in the audio or something like that. But basically, there is heartfelt thank yous. There are some great people saying that they really enjoy what we do. Keep up the good work. And anytime you want to send me something like that, I love it. Send it off to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. So today what I thought we would do, we have a lot of stuff coming up. I have Andrew Ross Sorkin, who has a new book out that really just, well, he's not on today. He's going to be on soon, though. We scheduled him for a couple of weeks from now, I believe it is. He has a book out that really uncovers, and I don't know how he did it, by the way. And if you haven't seen this yet, check out the Vanity Fair article that gives a number of pages of his book. But he has the inside line on what happened during those days when it looked like every bank and investment company was going out of business. What is the most amazing to me is, how did he get this information? In other words, how did he get exactly what Paulson was thinking, saying? How did he get what Blankfeld was saying? I mean, how did he understand what Jamie Dimon was thinking from J.P. Morgan? Wow. I mean, we're talking in quotes like it is verbatim, word for word discussion of what's happening and what happened then, I should say. Really quite amazing, and it sent a chill up my neck, I got to tell you. It was some things that were just unbelievable. So we do have that coming up. We have Andrew Ross Sorkin in a couple of weeks. We also have Meredith Whitney we called on, and we'll see if she's going to come aboard, and a few other great names that are going to bestow on us, hopefully, their wisdom to find out what's going on in the world of investing, where is the best place to be. But today I thought we'd focus on some of the most recent news, because there was some amazing things that happened, and really kind of go through one of those, you know, those days that you look at, okay, let's look backwards and see what's going on. Bring us up to date where we're going, because the news, the information that has been out has been astounding. You know, we talk about a CIT bankruptcy recently. We talk about a variety of, you know, the highest level of banks that have gone out of business in years. Unemployment at 10.2%, the highest it's been since 1983, I believe it was. We have an amazing number of market moves from the slam last week of the S&P 500, 2 weeks ago actually, down, what was it, down 4% or so, and the small caps down 6%, and to this week where we have, miraculously, out of nowhere, a giant move on the S&P 500 that one day that pretty much capped it off. As a matter of fact, you didn't have to do anything. It was Thursday. It was pretty much the whole week. If you didn't do anything else the rest of the week, if you just did it Thursday, hey, that was great. And we saw gold hit $1,100 per ounce. Wow. Amazing. We saw oil drop off. It just, you know, and a lot of this has to do with, you know, all the things that are going on around the world, where in the UK, they said they're going to continue pouring money in as much as they have to. In Australia, the one country in the world that never hit into a recession, that's kind of interesting. You know what? They said they're going to probably raise rates again for a third time in about a month or so. Why? This is kind of interesting. I found this really fascinating, and you have to really listen to what I'm about to tell you to and try to understand this. Here's what they said. They basically said that because they see the demand picking up dramatically, and they see that the work is moving forward, and exports are rising ever so fast, they're going to try to slow it down, of course, by raising rates. Now, what's interesting about that is their unemployment rate is going up, and demand is down internally, and they're still in a deflationary market. Now, the problem for me with that is, not that I'm trying to second guess any Fed official from any country around the world, but how do you actually get into a situation where you have high unemployment, you have low demand, you have deflationary market, and you're starting to raise rates here just because of exports are moving up? Well, if exports are moving up so much, why don't we have any job growth over there in Australia? It's kind of very similar to what's going on around the world. What we saw this week in the U.S. was productivity numbers going up through the roof. We saw one of the greatest dislocation between hours worked and productivity that we've ever seen. We actually saw wages actually go up a little bit too. It's all because of the same thing, what we talked about many times here, which is the consumption cannibalism. Consumption cannibalism, where the machines, or better said, as Arnold Schwarzenegger would said, the rise of the machines. Terrible imitation. I could do the, I'll be back. I think everybody could do that though. But, you know, when you think about it for a second, the productivity numbers are all because of whatever amount of production that has to be done right now is being squeezed out of as little people as can be. There's very little fat left on the bones. As a matter of fact, we wrote a post this week called The Skeleton Crews, Skeletal Employment. Basically, the skeleton crews are what's left inside of most of these manufacturing facilities. They're using any kind of technology and any kind of assistance that they can to help them. We've talked about this. That's why the bottom line looks so good for so many companies. Now, and I tell you, by the way, since we're talking about news right now, last week and the week before, we saw just a tremendous, just an unbelievable fall off in many stocks, anywhere from 10 to 20%. Some of them pop back up when people decide to buy in the dip and get back in. But boy, oh boy, did we see a tremendous sell-off that was not at all really restated back in the major indices. In other words, you saw about a 3, 4, 5% reduction in maybe the S&P or the Dow. But the individual stocks, material stocks in particular, got hammered. And they got hammered because the dollar started to rise. And there's this really interesting equation right now of the dollar and the stock market. The dollar has been rising because obviously there was some concern up until this week that the Fed may take their foot off the pedal a little bit and may actually maybe not start raising interest rates, but could possibly take the word extended and a few of the other nitty-gritty details, change those in their statement that came out on Wednesday. They didn't. They kept the word extended in there. They know that we have a severe problem with the unemployment rate. And again, we're going to get into that in a moment, that discussion with my lead analyst. And he's going to come in and talk about some of this unemployment. I think you've heard him before speak. He was on once or twice before. We try to keep him doing all the good work in the back. Slave labor. Not really. But Kevin's a great guy, very knowledgeable when it comes to the economy, Kevin Hoffman, and we'll talk with him about unemployment. But so when we talk about the news this week, I want to kind of go through a few things. First of all, we saw Asia start to rebound a little bit again. That was a lot due to the fact that there was better numbers across the board over the last couple of weeks coming out of the exports, the reality that there's going to be the continuation of monetary policies doing well. We saw Singapore, we saw Korea be a little bit soft, but then it started coming back dramatically. Korea still has a couple of issues there. We're in a new trade war over steel pipe fittings with China, and there's going to be a humongous tariff imposed there, and China is pissed. You know, this is not the first thing. We had the tires, now we have steel. There's a few other things. They put some tariffs on chickens. I don't know, you know, which one you weigh as more important, the tire, the steel, the chickens. And there's this really intense, I don't want to call it protectionism yet because we're on the verge of it, though. We're definitely on the verge of protectionism. And I think that even though everybody knows that protectionism is terrible, for on a global basis, and it will hit us back in the head eventually, or even maybe even sooner than later, I think that a lot of the things that are being done can be rationalized. They can rationalize, well, you know, the steel that we have, or whatever other commodity that maybe at the, you know, given day, whether it's rubber or whatever it is, you know, we think that for whatever reason, according to the rule of the law, it's not protectionism. We're just trying to do what we can to help our own people here. Well, obviously, at the same time, what we're seeing is, you know, anti-dumping laws, which are the laws that prevent, or supposedly going to prevent, one country from really undercutting prices and just dumping the product on another country so that they can do very well. Well, wait a second. Hold the phone for 1 second. Anti-dumping laws. One of the things is, and it's a little more complicated than this, but basically reducing prices to such a point that almost you're not making money on something just to kind of get the product out throughout another country. And that could be bad for that country's, the other country's, own products. So, for example, if we're selling cars undervalued, and we're selling the Buicks, which they love in China, and we're selling those Buicks undervalued over in China, and it's undercutting maybe the cost of a car that they make there, that may not be fair. It's a dumping issue. You know, okay, as an example. Well, wait a second. My recollection was that China has been, for years and years and years, doing such an amazing job at making such cheap products, but that's okay when we want to buy them, it seems, doesn't it? And we have people talking out of both ends of the spectrum here, both sides of their mouth. They're saying, on one hand, you know what? We want to have cheap products, of course, and we'll buy it from you if you're cheaper, which has obviously almost ruined our country, almost ruined our general capitalistic society to a point that we are more in services than manufacturing. That may be capitalism. That may be capitalism at its best. Finding the best, the cream of the crop of businesses that are the most successful, the most efficient, and the most profitable. Capitalism and profit go hand in hand. You can't separate the two, right? At least the pursuit of profit, the pursuit of clear capitalism. So now, what I find really most interesting is that we, on one hand, want these cheap products, but on the other hand, only when we want them. And I do agree, by the way, that there is something kind of fishy with the fact that we supported General Motors and we supported, in a way, Chrysler. We didn't do it with Ford, of course, and Ford is doing better for it. And now the GM cars that are being sold, let's say, in China and in Japan and Europe, aren't those, in a way, subsidized by the U.S. government? Isn't that, in a way, unfair trade practice? Think about that for a second. If they're not helping out their car companies, not saying they're not, but if they're not, and we're helping out ours, isn't that unfair in trade? Why do we have to help ours out? Well, we can go through that whole story if you want, but we'll save it. You know the details. The end of the story is they didn't make a high enough product. There was not enough demand. We ended up buying from somewhere else. End of story. End of story. So where do we go from here? Well, it seems like we got to do things like continually bail out places. I mean, AIG is miraculously profitable all of a sudden, although they don't know if they can return the $85 billion. Give me $85 billion, I'll find a way to be profitable. We find out this week that Fannie Mae needs another $15 billion to be pumped in order to stay viable. Delinquencies are up. Foreclosures are up. Now, all of a sudden, we have a new law. We have two new laws. We have, number one, the extension of the home buyer's credit, the $8,000 credit. That's going to be, on average, costing about $42,000 per house, because the credit is a credit. And if you have to convert that credit in federal tax credits, federal taxes, back into real money that has to be earned, $42,000. It's going to cost every house that's sold $42,000. I enunciated that because I think it is outrageous. Why is it outrageous? Because, you know, at this point, there's enough houses on the market. If you can't qualify for a house, you can't get a house. I mean, at this point, we got to start thinking about some other kind of way that we believe is really the best way to run our country. The housing market is important. It is not the most important thing in the world. Is it the most important for the banking sector? Possibly. But there's more than just the banking sector out there. When we're talking about 10.2% unemployment, which the bulls will conveniently say is a lagging indicator, the bears will conveniently say, oh, look at that, things are getting worse, and that is not only lagging, but we believe that it's a sign of the future. So you can't win on either side. But what it is a reality check. Let's be right down the middle and say it's a coincidence indicator. This is what the unemployment rate is about right now. Well, with a 10.2% unemployment rate and a real unemployment rate of about 17.5% right now overall, This is not a good situation. And when we talk with Kevin, I'm going to ask him about, you know, what's going on when we compare the unemployment rate now compared to what was supposed to be on the stress test. Do you remember those? Those were done just only a few months ago. And worst case scenario is supposed to be about 8.5%, 9% at the very worst. The baseline was even lower. And the more adverse situation was going to be a problem, was going to require the banks to bring up more capital. Well, hello, we're here. And the banks are being bid up. Yeah, sure, they came down the last few weeks, but you know what? You got to scratch your head and wonder where the rest of this money is going to come from. Because not only did we do the tax credit for the new housing this week, but extended it through, I believe, April. But at the same time, it looks like that there are additional initiatives that are being put forth. There are things. We have the extension of the unemployment coverage. And we have a few little bitties that were also enacted. And I wonder where, you know, cash for appliances coming up. Where is all this money coming from? Where are we getting the money to pay for these initiatives? Because right now it seems like we're in the hole pretty well. And while I realize that the Obama administration will say that they were, you know, this is inherited, I really question, you know, okay, it's inherited, fine, but we don't need to make it much worse, do we? You know, the job situation is so horrible, so tough, that my concern is, you know, what is the plan at this point? Is it just to put more money in? I don't know if that's working right now. It's not getting to the places that it needs to be. Of course, this weekend we also have the vote, at least one part of the vote, on the healthcare bill. Where is that going to go? Is there going to be a public option? Is there not going to be a public option? I mean, who knows when it comes out of all the committees what's going to end up being? But I can tell you right now, it's going to be costly. If we don't do it, it's going to be costly. However you want to slice it, it's going to be costly. The question is, you know, what's more costly? What's going to be higher on the level of actual cost and that's going to cause some problems? I got to tell you, it doesn't seem that all this. I mean, I'm kind of really trying my best. You know, and there was a point there for a while that I was thinking, you know what, things are getting better. It's looking a lot better. But I'm wondering, boy, are things getting better? Are things? Gold at 1,100 on the way to where? I mean, I've seen a lot of recent talk about it up to 2,000, which, by the way, makes me think that the likelihood is it's not going to get there. You know, you start getting that chatter going around. Unemployment rates? I've been hearing it could get as high as 12%, the trajectory that we're on right now. I don't think we'll get there, but is the possibility of 11% by the end of 2010? Absolutely. What is that going to look like? The official fully under, you know, the full unemployment rate could be, I don't know, 19 or 20%. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that this stimulus really does kick in. I hope that we don't have to spend another $500 billion bailing out banks and more stimulus, because we have to find a way to restrain ourselves, because if we do that, we're just going to end up paying over and over. You know all that. I don't want to bore you with that. But there's a little bit of a point. You know what? What I'm going to do is let's stop here. Let's bring in Kevin. Let me get him on mic, and we'll start talking to him about this unemployment issue. I think a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen next. And at the same time, we'll talk about some of the interesting stocks that have really kind of moved this week, and what's happening, some of the noise and the flutter about some of the things that are really exciting and what we've been looking at. So stick around. We'll be back in a second. Talk more about unemployment and the stock market, as well as some investment ideas that may be worthwhile, something to take a look at. You're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll be right back. And we're back. And as I promised you, we're going to have my good friend, and he is just the best analyst you'll find out there, Kevin Hoffman. He works here at Horowitz & Company and is directly involved in our process of Quanta Funda Techno, you know, where we look for stocks, we look under the hood, and then we look at the technicals to find out what's going on and making decisions on what's happening here in terms of how we invest for the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. Kevin, how are you, buddy?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Hey, well, of course. I mean, it's such a far walk for you to come into the studio, right?
Very difficult.
I don't want to stress you too much. But, you know, Kevin also, one of the great things about Kevin, what he supplies when you read the blog, if you check out those just unbelievable charts, that's what Kevin is really good at in looking at the economics, looking at the past. But I want to talk about we got a couple things I want to talk about, Kevin, all right?
Okay.
I wanted to talk about the unemployment number of last week, and then we'll maybe talk about some stocks that we like. But let's talk a little bit about the unemployment number that came out on Friday. What do we got? 10.2 now, right?
Right.
And we saw 190,000 jobs lost. But the market seemed to kind of like didn't like it, but then liked it. Kind of was all over the place during the day on Friday. You had some good thoughts about what was behind that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that because, you know, not very many analysts got that correct. You know, most analysts were looking for a 9.9 to 10.1 number. So we didn't see hardly anybody looking for 10.2, which is quite a surprise for the market. So we saw futures drop off quite a bit in early trading on the futures market, but we saw a quick rally thereafter. And, you know, some of that bounce might have been because, you know, we got some of these payroll revisions, which is from the August and September months versus actually this month.
Right.
So people are seeing, you know, another 91,000 jobs added on top of those August and September numbers versus
to the good side, to the good
right,
side.
Right, to the good side.
Right, right.
Rather than the negative 190 versus the estimated 175,000 that analysts were looking for.
So what's interesting is that we look at the past news, the revisions this time. This is the old, what is it? How's it go? Good news is really good news. Bad news is
even better news.
Well, you know, there's some truth behind that, because really, I guess some of the thinking is that, you know, Bernanke left rates unchanged. I mean, obviously couldn't go down, only can go up, but that wasn't in the cards. Kept basically length. We analyzed that, by the way, folks. If you don't track us on Twitter at Andrew Horowitz, just go to Andrew Horowitz on Twitter. Twitter/Andrew Horowitz. You know, every one of our blog posts that we put up on thedisciplinedinvestor.com is available immediately through just it goes right to Twitter. It's kind of cool. So we put up a post right within what, 10 minutes of 5 minutes, 10 minutes with the statement, Kevin,
right, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And we highlighted all the different areas of the change. One of the things they kept was the extended, the language, as they call it, the extended period of soft or easy money policy. But maybe what they were thinking, I think, or tell me what you think, is that if we had a really bad jobs number, that the Fed will continue to pump liquidity into the system and we may see additional stimulus. If we saw a really good number, well, that's good for the economy. Something like that?
That's very possible. I mean, I think people were looking for, you know, more stimulus, and, you know, with the rates staying lower for a longer period of time, this just emphasizes the fact that you know, the Fed can continue to hold rates at a low period for a long period of time.
Right.
And you know, with their estimates on inflation, they're very low, even though we're starting to see gold rise rather rapidly.
Now, wow, that's unbelievable. Now, we have a nice position in gold across all of our portfolios, right? So that's been amazing, because we've gone back and forth, you and I, about the whole gold issue. You know, do we put more in? Do we cut down a little bit? You know, we have some silver in a lot of our portfolios, the very aggressive portfolios. But the gold position has been remarkable.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable that, you know, just a few months ago we were talking about, you know, this is not really the best investment, but, you know, it's turned out to be to work rather well.
Right, the whole point was to be hedging. Everybody looks at gold as a hedge in case things just really fall apart. You know, I have clients that own actual bars, gold bars. And, you know,
the bullion
itself. Right. I mean, and that's one of those what's worth a lot of money, lots of scratch on that. I always talk about, you know, what do I rather have if the earth ends and the financial industry or in the financial infrastructure of the world just implodes? And I always say, of course, everybody wants gold. I want tuna fish. But we'll talk about that another time if you don't remember that discussion. But now the gold issue, let's talk about that for a second. I mentioned it before that some people are talking about gold at 2,000. I mean, I don't know how unlikely or likely that is, but right now we clipped 1,100.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that the fundamentals, or at least maybe not the fundamentals, let's talk about forget the fundamentals, technicals still look strong for gold?
Well, I mean, you're on an uptrend, obviously.
Right.
And, you know, you're starting to see this this forward looking that the markets are always trying to look at.
Right.
And, you know, people are really starting to believe that if interest rates are going to stay low for a long period of time, that inflation is bound to get into this market one way or another. And so gold is everybody's flocking towards it. It's just...
Right. Whether it may or may not be an inflation hedge, that's what everybody thinks of.
Exactly.
Gold as.
Right.
Exactly. And we're seeing oil kick up in price too, which is really interesting. But let's get back to the unemployment numbers for a second, and let's talk about that just for a moment. You know, one of the things, I plucked a great chart. I was looking at it with you earlier. From Calculated Risk. We'll have that on thedisciplinedinvestor.com in the show notes. And for all those that you said, hey, where's all the information? We put a new little link up at the top of the site that says show notes. Click that, and all the show notes from the past podcast, all the links, everything's in there. But what we see here is, if you can go find that, because it's really cool, it's the unemployment rate scenarios versus the actual. Because I was saying to myself, I was thinking, and I said to you, Kevin, I said, you know, I recall the stress test that were done back in April, and the baseline of what the stocks, what the unemployment rate was supposed to be, and the, you know, and then what the worst case scenario was. How does that look? How does that compare to where we are? And what are we looking at here? So we're seeing what? The quarter four 2009, the baseline was 8.8%. In a more adverse situation, it was 9.7%. And what was it now, Kevin?
We're starting to see it at 10.2%.
Right.
And, you know, there's no end in sight as far as
right.
People being laid off.
Right, because it's good for the company. What's good for the company is good for the company.
Right.
You know, so to speak. And then in quarter one in 2010, the most adverse was supposed to be 10. The top end, by the way, to give you the punchline of the story, was 10.4 in Q4 2010. I mean, at this trajectory, if you just kind of draw a simple line across, we're going to be at the 12% range in the quarter four of 2010. And that's troubling. I don't know if that's actually going to happen. Obviously, I'm not projecting that. But I don't think there's any argument that we're going to be at 11% unless there's some just massive government hiring that goes on, because it's getting to a point that I think maybe also companies are realizing that they don't have a choice in the matter.
Right. I mean, the only way you're going to get some employment is if you can start getting growth to return to the marketplace, and companies willing to lend and take on risk in order to grow.
Good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the truth is good luck. I mean, you know, even though we're seeing good earnings come out because of the job situation, when they cut the expenses and they cut the, you know, made the bottom line look better. I just think that the risk in terms of companies trying to take on from top to bottom, from the banks risking money to go out to lend, and from companies looking to hire people and to expand, unless you have massive amounts of money, by the way, you know, a truckload of money in your bank, 40 billion like a Microsoft and Apple, you know, or any other tech companies or whoever else out there, I think it's very interesting. By the way, I was talking to a friend last night, my friend John Markman, and he said to me, you know, could you believe that Apple is the fourth largest company. I got to look at that. Is it the fourth largest tech company or the fourth largest company?
Fourth largest company seems hard to believe.
But I don't know. I got to look at that. But I guess maybe it's the fourth largest tech company.
Hmm.
And that seems also hard to believe too, but, you know, I guess they're doing it well. I thought what we'd do is talk about, since I have you here, we got you out of the, you know, we took you away from your pencils and your Excel spreadsheet. You know, he doesn't use, by the way, just so everybody knows something about Kevin, he doesn't use pencils and pens. He uses Excel. He's like a whiz. Anything that needs to be done. I said, listen, I'd like to look at it. He goes, you want an Excel spreadsheet? No, just write. No. He says, no, I'll do it in Excel for you. No problem. I'm like, okay.
They call us spreadsheet jockeys.
Yeah, spreadsheet jockeys or Excel geeks. They call them Excel geeks. Well, he's done some amazing things recently when we put together data, and that's why how we're spitting out the data on our sites so regularly in terms of, you know, when it comes to economics and stocks. But let's talk about a couple of stocks, because a couple of things passed through our screens this week. We full disclosure, by the way, I want to mention something, because, you know, Kevin, I don't think people understand this totally. When we talk about stocks, and I talk about on the podcast a lot of times, you know, we're in and out. As I say, what do we say? We love them. As long as they love us, right?
That's right. That's right.
You know, so we may be in and out of a stock. So if we mention a stock here, you know, be careful, because we set stops. We use our discipline to set stops, like what happened recently with Steck. We lost some money. But boy, oh boy, if we would have held that stock, we'd be down, what, 40% or so right now, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was ugly.
And the other thing is with the level of news that's coming out these days, you never know if, you know, the company's doing good one day and it's doing bad the next.
I say it's like trying to take a sip of water out of an open fire hydrant, isn't it?
That's true.
I mean, it's like impossible. It's
right.
Just totally impossible.
Yep,
but I thought we'd talk about a few companies with what we just talked about, and with the disclaimer that, yeah, we own all these. These are long positions that we're talking about.
Right.
And the other thing I want to mention is that we may be in and out of these, so be careful and do your own research. How's mm-hmm. that? Okay. So let's talk about Allegiant.
Okay.
Allegiant Travel Company. They're an airline company. And why the heck in the world would we want an airline company right now? And why would we want one that headquarters in Las Vegas and has a lot of point-to-point services from small cities? Why? Because they have some good numbers.
Yeah, they do. Allegiant's, you know, it's one of those niche companies. They have the, you know, the small cities and destinations that people want to get to that, you know, can't get into a major city airport.
Right.
So, you know, they just kind of have that perfect a perfect place in order to fly into.
Right. They don't have like the overhead, you know, they're using a much, well, of course they don't have the flights either, you know,
right.
But their market cap almost $1 billion, mm-hmm. this company. You know, volume has been, you know, it's not the biggest volume. It's under about 500,000 shares a day. But that earnings growth that you were telling me about, the earnings growth and compared to the PEG and all that. I mean, that earnings growth, what is it now? What are they at this point?
Yeah, that 3 to 5 year growth rate is somewhere around 58%.
Unbelievable.
You know, but quarter over quarter, we've seen consistent growth through this company on both revenues and earnings per share.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about Allegiant Airlines is that their debt rate is only about 17%, which is absolutely incredible for an airline company that,
right.
you know, is constantly either doing maintenance on airplanes, purchasing new airplanes, and as well as the fluctuating fuel costs.
Right.
So to have a debt rating of only 17%, that's
pretty
rather
good.
Remarkable.
Right. And what's also interesting about them is, which I like about them, is that a lot more mutual funds and investment and managers are owning this over time. We always like to see that institutional ownership. And their earnings over, even during this recent downtrend, yeah, it did spike down a little bit in June of 08. I mean, we looked at, you know, it's, Kevin, remember that this week you did a... you did a spreadsheet, back to the spreadsheets again, folks. It's like a commercial for Google Docs or for Excel, Microsoft. You know, we should talk about that, by the way, the Google Docs, how we got that to update. Do you know that? I don't think most people know this. You can actually get stock quotes inside of Google Docs in the spreadsheet program and actually have your own portfolio running in there. It is. You did a few of those, right?
Kevin? Yeah, it's
and then share them.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
And they update automatically on the fly,
right?
And you know, they're delayed as far as stock quotes go, but you know, delayed quotes are.
Well, what's the cost?
It's free.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why. Can't get everything, you know, everything for free, but these days most things you can.
But it's a good way to, you know, analyze your portfolio if you have your portfolio, if you're, you know, not having any other system to work with. It's
right.
a great system to
right.
work with.
So let's just go back to Allegiant for a second and what we look at. So this passed through our screens, obviously, the quanta, where we do screening. We look for high return on equity. We're looking at certain trading issues. We're looking at growth. We're looking at margin. So it passed through all that. We always use this unemotional screening process. Then we go to the fundamentals. We talked about some of that a moment ago, the growth rates. We talk about the cash flow per share, $2.90 per share, return on equity of 16%. A little bit light for us. We usually like over 20.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to make a little bit of changes to our calculations right now because the market environment has changed a little bit. And then we look at, you know, what's the quarter over quarter growth, things of that nature, okay? But then we look at the technicals. Now, looking at the technicals, I'm looking at a weekly chart. Do you have a weekly chart in front of you, Kevin?
Yes.
All right. So what is it that you notice on this?
You know, we're kind of seeing a little bit of a downtrend here, but we're also seeing a little bit of a basing action. So, you know, we've got lower highs, but we've also got lower lows, which isn't exactly optimal for this type of company. But we do see it breaking right above its 200-day and above the 50-day in this last week. So that's
yeah.
a good sign that, you know, we may get some purchases coming in here.
And then also what I thought was interesting was the volume.
Right, yeah, the volume's starting to pick up on the up days. Versus on the down days.
Right, that was kind of interesting. And then the other thing is that's interesting is that 14 days, the short interest is pretty high here. So it's kind of two ways you can look at the short interest, right? Short interest is how many people are betting the stock is going to be lower.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things you can do is you can look at it 14 days, meaning that will take 14 days of average trading to actually clean up all the short shares. So therefore, if it's a high, 14 days is kind of high. If there is something that happens and is beneficial to the stock, it could pop.
Right, you know, especially on a company that's 50-day average volume is just a little bit above 400,000 a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. All right, so this is one's interesting. What do we see any problems besides, okay, we're seeing a not the most perfect technical here, but a good-looking technical in terms of we see a couple of a double bottom bases. We have a head and shoulders that's coming out. We kind of saw the play out of that particular pattern, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Airlines, not my favorite. What's the story with the load factors? I know that's what I was getting at before. By the way, I don't know if we posted this yet. We'll make sure to do it this week. We have all the airline load factors and the you know, how many miles they're flying and all that. We have this really neat spreadsheet that we do on a regular basis internally. But what I think that we were looking at Allegiant. They have some amazing numbers.
Yeah, I mean that's the key here for Allegiant Airlines is that you know they're consistently flying fuller planes than their competitors. You see across the board, you'll be able to see this on the Disciplined Investor website, But you're constantly seeing high 88% across the board for Allegiant, whereas U.S. Airways and American Airlines, they're always, you know, either in the high 70s to low 80s as far as their capacity that they're flying.
Right. So here's let me tell you how to read between the lines. Two things. Number one, first of all, Allegiant, they're flying pretty full, right?
Right.
So that may be good. That may not. Maybe they're using frequent flyers. Maybe they're just putting crew on the planes. Maybe they're flying people at a low cost. I don't know. Okay. But on the other hand, if you're a flyer, maybe you want to go on the other, you get that middle seat open. Right? You got to look at it in a couple different ways here.
That's right.
I mean, who knows? But you know what? It's not all rosy, but this, you know, it comes to some of the transportation companies, which, you know, again, as you, if from a trading standpoint, I mean, we like this. We've been in and out of this a couple of times. Interesting. We're not going to stay if it fails on us, but it's interesting. Technology. I thought that there was two things. I thought technology. We had a couple of them, but we've been looking at a breakout, a beautiful breakout, actually, on Cognizant. What's the symbol? CTSH, right?
Yes.
Same stuff. Let's talk about that for a minute. What this is really neat is our return on equity is right. It's over 28%. Mm-hmm. Growth rate is just great. PE is down by – where's the PE on this now? It's somewhere in the 20s, right?
Yeah, it's low 20s, around 24, and it's had a five-year PE range of anywhere between 9 and 61. So
wow.
We're still at a fairly low range here. But what's interesting is Cognizant came out with earnings last week on November 3rd, and they came out with 49 cents a share versus the estimate of 46. Oh, no, excuse me. It was 48 cents versus 44.
Oh.
They increased their guidance to 49 cents versus the 46 cents estimate. So, you know, good things here for Cognizant, you know, both guidance in the future as well as this quarter's earnings as well as revenue, which has been difficult for most companies to try and beat, as they've been cutting out workers and laying off, cutting as many costs as possible, but still not being able to get that sales growth. That right. Sales growth is key in order for them to grow.
Obviously, they're not going to lay off the salespeople.
That's right.
I mean, I guess, right?
Those are the people bringing in the money.
Right, exactly. So what's interesting about this is if you look at this, it's kind of a cool couple of patterns on here. About $35, it broke out of its range, kind of that top end range, 35, 36, on a technical standpoint. It's mm-hmm. it's pretty, you know, the volume isn't as good as I'd like to see it on a breakout, but it's clearly much higher and rising. That's good. Mm-hmm. And in this environment, what's really interesting is if we are talking, and we've been harping on this whole idea that we have a jobless recovery, something that we're seeing a lot of companies that are going in and finding ways to cut expenses at the same time looking at ways to automate. Well, one of the things that they may do is hire somebody like a Cognizant who does custom IT consulting, technology outsourcing services, things like that. So what's interesting about this company is they may be in somewhat of the sweet spot. They were a little bit weak earlier in this year in March, which everybody was. You know, they threw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
But it looks like their growth rate is good. And all the different signals that we look at from a fundamental is interesting. I think that there's still some headwinds in this area. The NASDAQ has been leading. The question is, when we saw that sell-off last week, a lot of the NASDAQ was lagging. How big is this company? It's a large cap company, right? It's I think it was over the last 10, 12, 10 and a half.
Oh, 12.5 billion.
Oh, 12 billion now. Wow. Only has 1.2 days of short interest, so that's interesting.
Yep.
But definitely a go growth opportunity here. And they I think there was a what was it? China, no, I mean everybody says China. It was China or India. They were expanding some of the services out. I think to
somewhere. they're starting to focus more on the Asian region to mm-hmm. to try and promote more revenue growth and rely less on their domestic sales. And you know what's really interesting about this company is one that, you know, more and more funds are starting to recognize this as an opportunity. So there are, you know, more fund purchases. But also, you know, with last week's earnings, we're also starting to see quite a few analysts upgrade their target price. There's currently 17 analysts that do their analysis on these stocks, on this stock particularly. And the target price, they increased 12% last week.
Wow.
From $42.91 to up to $48.06. So the next target price for them is about 48.06, and if you take a look at the chart, that's technically about the level of resistance there. So if we could see this stock come up to about 48 or so, that could be a good point to either take some profits and look to see if we can break up to the high side again.
Interesting. Try to play with the house's money a little bit. And then let's talk about a sleeper here, something that is interesting. One of the things that we've been very concerned about, one of the things, there's so many different things to be like interested in, concerned about, excited about. It's all a big, one big mess of thought process that goes on here at Horowitz & Company. But Becton Dickinson, you know, one of the things about the healthcare is what in the world is going to come out of this 1,000 pages or so that is being drafted in Congress right now and maybe ratified or not or changed or going through committee that maybe somehow nothing that we've seen or something that totally looks familiar in the end with this healthcare rulings, laws, initiatives. But we've been reluctant to put too much money into the area of healthcare because the HMOs, we don't know if there's going to be a single-payer plan. We don't know if it's going to be a public option, a competitive bidding option. Who knows what's going to come out of this? But one of the things we did like was things that make some of the diagnostic products. You know, we are in a country that has an aging population. One of the things we like to look at is, you know, how does that benefit, you know, how can we find benefit in that and where are the places that can help people? Well, Becton Dickinson is one of those that we thought were interesting medical and dental supplies. I went to my dentist recently. I must tell you, this is an interesting story. Mm-hmm. I went to the dentist recently and I had a, you know, and of course I needed a full mouth x-ray. You know, and they don't have x-ray, you know, they don't do like they did in the old days where they took the x-ray for all you older people know about this. For all you youngins, I'm going to tell you. They used to take the x-rays and put them in your mouth, and then they would put them aside. And then after they finished your x-rays, they'd go into a machine and they'd develop them, pretty much like negatives. They'd put the x-rays inside of this little cardboard thing, and the doctor would hold it up to a light and look at it. No more. Now they have machines that do that, right? What you do is you take the x-ray, but it goes right into a computer, which is great. It can see a different level of detail. They color it. You can see it. It's still, you know, look, Mom, no cavities. But the importance here is that just like the same theme that we've been talking about, and the theme is simple, that companies are doing their best to try to really bring a lot more to the bottom line. And how do they do that? Well, if you don't have to go through the whole process of, let's say, taking the picture, but first of all, buying the film, taking the picture, you know, the x-ray, and then developing it, throwing it out in the garbage, and all the time wasted in that, you just click, picture, that's a major savings for the dentist. So therefore, when I needed that full mouth x-ray for $450, by the way, mm-hmm. that $450 was pretty much just, you know, there's no expense to that besides the time it took to take the x-ray. So these are the kind of things that a company like Becton Dickinson would do where they supply devices, laboratory equipment, diagnostic products, things like that. So anyway, with that, I thought it was kind of interesting. You know, we like this. It came through our process and our Quanta Fund at Tecna. But let's talk a little bit about this. This is not – I don't think – we can't consider this a go-go stock, right?
No, definitely not. This is more of a, you know, a value play here. We're seeing a yield of about 2% on this stock. So – you're not going to get the you know the pop like a Cognizant will give you, but you know it should be a decent long term play. You know, depending on how the news plays out with the healthcare as you were talking about previously.
Right. Let's just say that. I mean, I want to say this again because it's important. We try to pick up stocks and ride them as much as we can and get off of them if they're not cooperating.
That's right.
I mean, that's the bottom line here. So you have to kind of look at that. We'll hold a stock forever if it's cooperating. You know, it starts to drop off and do something that we don't like. The management changes. There's bad numbers that come out. Earnings don't look good. We don't like the prospects. The market starts tanking. I mean, 100 different reasons. We're out. Right. But, you know, we like to use sell stops. We use sizing of our trades. But this one I thought was interesting. Did you see, by the way, I was looking at this. Did you see the consistency of the quarterly earnings growth?
Yes. It's always been, you know, right around that that 10 to 20% range, which is, you know, rather incredible for
unbelievable.
A company to consistently – you know, grow at that rate is, you know, rather remarkable.
And it has a 2% yield. That I when I looked really into this, I was like, wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and on a technical note, we're seeing a lot of support here in this 65 range. So, you know, over the next month or so, we should see some interesting buying coming in here, you know, depending on the healthcare, obviously. But, you know, you just broke above the 200 and the 50 over the last week, as many stocks have, you know, with the recent pullback that we've seen.
So, and then the volume. Do you see that volume really picked up there?
Yeah,
with the upside.
Yeah,
that was interesting. But the if I'm looking at a chart here, I might see a weekly chart or a daily chart going back to September of 2008. I'm going to see a kind of a downtrend here. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So what's interesting is you see two things. It's a downtrend, but it's a narrowing downtrend. That's what I'm seeing here.
Yeah, you're starting to see some consolidation.
And we have one, two, three, I'll even say four. We have four different, at $60, by the way, $62, four different bottoms.
Right.
That's a good sign. There's a lot of support in there. Now, the stock's trading at about 70-ish right now. I don't know exactly where it is, where it finished. I guess it finished last week almost at 71, about.
That's correct.
Yeah, so... And what's interesting is there's definitely some negatives here to the stock too. I'm not just giving you those. You know, we talked about that before. Some of the stocks we talked about before. You know, I was kind of really excited about. You know, we're getting a little bit less. We're not as allocated as we were. Starting about 2 weeks ago, we pulled back a lot of money for our client accounts in terms of the aggressive accounts. For those of them that we still like, a lot of the international exposure, Singapore, we love it. We like Brazil. We pulled back a little bit on that. Some of our bond plays are doing really well. We like those, and that's a good position to be in right now with the Fed keeping their foot on the pedal, at least for the moment. And then, of course, in China and some of the other areas we really like, the materials we still like. But, you know, when we talk about the trading portfolios that we have, you know, we pull back a little bit some of the money, and we kind of been balancing that back and figuring what to get back in, et cetera. That's what we do here. One of these is I don't know, I can see Becton's been in it for a little while here now. It could be a interesting longer-term play because of the lack of volatility, I think.
Right. And then the one thing that's equally important to notice is that, you know, they came out with earnings as well last week, and we saw them come in line, but they also beat on revenues, which is important. But, you know, what people or investors are really starting to look at now is what are companies forecasting? And many times they're getting dinged on that forecast, especially if you look at a company like Steck, who... Oof. Reported actually fairly decent earnings, but the forward-looking forecast was rather ugly.
But they had an inventory problem, too. There was some inventory issue with some of their chips.
Right, right, right.
But that was not only ugly, that was horrific.
Right.
I mean, I don't think I saw a stock drop so fast ever in my day. I mean, that it went up almost on a vertical parabolic. We actually shorted that once before and kind of clipped out of it very quickly when it was still rising. It was just out of control. We bought it. Made a little money, then we lost money, and we said, you know what, we're not getting near this thing again because way too volatile, and boy, are we glad we did. We tried to trade it even. The thing moves so fast that it's almost impossible to get your hands around that thing.
Definitely.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a kind of a rough one. They make memory, if you will, or you know, they make solid-state memory.
Right, the SSIDs.
SSDs.
Oh,
SSDs. Yeah, SSID, right, I always do that too. That's the ID systems, you know? SSDs, yeah, solid-state drives. I always make that mistake, too, so don't feel bad. I probably make mistakes all the time on this podcast. I have no idea. You know what? People could be like, he said what? You know? All right, so what do we see? So right now, the markets right now seem to have a lot of the endless bid, as we call it. You know, but at the same time, there's a lot of caution being thrown out there. I mean, the move on the markets, not this week, but the previous week, when we saw that 4% down on the S&P and about, I don't know, 6% on the small caps, and then a lot of it, not all of it, about 2% of it came back or so this week. Small caps have been very, very stubborn, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been rather weak along with the banks. The banks and financials have been incredibly weak this week. And, you know, part of that's, you know, coming off that CIT bankruptcy that was filed. What was that, last Sunday?
It was a week ago, yeah.
So. Yeah, Sunday, a week ago.
Ah, who cares?
Yeah, right.
It's over.
It doesn't seem to matter because... You know, you see the VIX rise up to like a 4-month high at above, you know, 30, which is
that was
usually,
quick.
You know, that's the fear indicator, right. Or a lot of people refer to that as the fear indicator. But you know, as fast as it went up, it came right back down. You know, we're starting to see, you know, low 20s again, which is rather remarkable.
Unbelievable! That was the fastest VIX move I ever saw.
Yep.
So the what's also I think interesting is that the. You know, I kind of go back and forth, and there's still that skepticism about, you know, how long is this going to last and where are we going. There's clearly an overhead at about 1070 on the S&P 500. About 1035 is also a break point in terms of support. 1100 is clearly a ceiling that is really, really tough for the markets to deal with right now. You know, we managed to get the Dow Jones over 10,000 again last week. Woo! For Thursday, it kind of looked like it was going to, you know, who knows where it was going. It was just a nonstop rampage, and you know, on really not much information. To be honest with you, it didn't seem like the productivity numbers were really that exciting to excite a market like it is. But who knows what starts the fire these days? But I've talked to a lot of people back and forth, a lot of my colleagues and people that we've had on the show before, and there's a lot of discussion about what happened a couple of weeks ago could have been a forced selling event that we saw, like, for example, back in March of 2009 and October, November around there in 2008. Whereas we had the Galleon hedge fund that was, you know, obviously going under. They had about $3.5 billion that they had to liquidate. And there was what was called the Rolodex selling going on. So here's how it sets up. You have Galleon has to liquidate their fund, $3.5 billion. That doesn't happen so easily. They said they did that prior, about 2 weeks ago, but we were skeptical about that, saying, you know, is that really happening? What's also happening is that they're looking at anybody and anything that touched Galleon. In other words, if you had a phone interaction with them, if you had some instant messaging, if you had some conversation, if you had any kind of business dealings with them, they're investigating all of that right now. That's why we're seeing additional arrests keep coming. Well, what happens if they start looking through their Rolodex of some of the traders and found some people that they wanted to talk to? Well, they want to make sure that their positions are cleaned up and there's no relationship to any of the positions they have potentially to those that maybe Galleon has. So that's some of the, I think I'm saying that right, Galleon. I hope I'm saying that right. That they are, you know, trying to unwind that, the Rolodex trade. So I don't know if that's true, but it did look like a lot of forced selling. It looked like almost, you know, total outright crazy selling going on, you know, a week or so ago that reminded me, we talked about it. I said my screen looked like it looked in September 2008 with all the stocks that are out there. They were just red and horrible.
Yep.
I mean, it was terrible, and particularly materials. They got obliterated. Steel, right. Aluminum, chemicals. It was rough. So anyway, we're going to, I think maybe we'll end it here. We got a lot covered here. I think Kevin Hoffman, you are awesome. I thank you for coming on today.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, thanks. I'll speak to you soon, maybe on Monday. And we'll start this all over again, the continuation of Markets 2009, okay?
All right.
All right, see you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks.
And with that, we'll close our show and thank everybody for listening. May I suggest to you as an early gift that you check out The Disciplined Investor Essential Strategies for Success. And you can buy it at Amazon for like $13. It's available at audible.com as well, and also at the iTunes store. It's pretty cheap these days there, and you can download it for your Kindle. If you have a Kindle, which it seems a lot of people do these days, do me a favor, check it out over at amazon.com, The Disciplined Investor. And as I mentioned to you as before, I'll mention again, you know, if you're undecided about your investing and what you want to do, you want to check out what we're doing here, you can check that 14-minute virtual tour. I encourage you to do so. It's the perfect time of year to do it over at The Disciplined Investor. We'll put a link in the show notes for that as well. And finally, one request. Tell a friend about The Disciplined Investor podcast. Send a link to them. Say, hey, listen to this on iTunes. Check it out. Subscribe. You know, the more listeners we have, the more we can get out the word about what's going on in these markets and doing our best to kind of buck the establishment when it comes to investing, to give you some ideas on how to profit in these most difficult of times. So thanks for listening again. This is Andrew Horowitz. This is the Disciplined Investor Podcast. You are a disciplined investor as long as you listen and hear. Thanks for joining me. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.